The Pop Culture Show is presented by Big 5 Rum. Welcome to the club. I really feel like I'm in the club because I keep going back to that rum bottle. It is so good. The Pop Culture Show, we're a deep dive into the latest celebrity news, music, TV, technology. We throw in some observations of this crazy life. We're your hosts. I'm Barnes. That's Leslie.
Hello.
There's Cubby.
Hello.
Please rate, review, and subscribe. And we have some really big news to share with our pop cult. Guys, would you say on the scale of 1 to 10, this is a 50?
I mean, I think so. I think we need to explain it, too. We have to use some analogies and compare it to what it's like.
This is only for the pop cult, though. This is for our On the Down Low group. Everyone, okay. All of you listening that have been here since the beginning. So if you're not in the pop cult, please just go to thepopcultureshow.com and sign up. That we don't hit you with a ton of email. Just when we have, we give you the guest list first.
You're saying join the cult, basically.
Join the cult. Yep. And then we're also going to make a video for each of you. And we're going to have that. It'll be hitting your inbox like this week, like when you're hearing this show. If you're in the pop cult, you will start to see there's going to be an email coming through with a very special video, and we're going to explain what's happening.
Sounds elaborate.
Leslie, we're about customer service.
Sounds like a lot of work for you, Barnes.
It does sound like a lot of work. Well, you're going to have to be talking on each individual video, too. So if you would like to get that, just go to our page, thepopcultureshow.com, and just at the very bottom it says join the cult, but sometimes the pop-up thing says join the cult. I think it's big news, and I'm excited to share.
I think it is, too. Leslie, what do you think?
I think it's huge news.
It is huge.
Yeah.
It will change things. We'll just say that. And we do have those in the pop cult know who our guest is today.
Matt Nathanson.
Oh, yeah. So come on, get higher, loosen my lips, faith and desire, and the swing of your hips. Just pull me down hard and drown me in love. So come on. I love that guy.
You know, he loves so many genres of music. I have a funny feeling we're going to be just talking music the whole time.
That's the thing about him, outside of being a great singer-songwriter. He's a student of all kinds of music.
Yeah, he's
such
smart.
A funny guy. I love this song that he did with our good buddy from Sugarland, Jennifer Nettles. Turn, 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 turning me on like a slow fire burn. I know that it's wrong, still I run, 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 run right into you.
I think he's channeling Bono there big time.
In that video? Yeah, absolutely. So Matt Nathanson's coming up. Want to send a thank you out. Cubby, did you get some merch?
You know, I did, and I love it, and it's cool. And I didn't mean to do that, but it worked out. K-U-H-L, cool. What's up with these jackets we got? Because I love it.
They were like, you guys seem like you need to be warmed up. No, you, because of all your snow. And they, Leslie, when I see you next, I do have something for you. Look, they sent cool chocolate.
Ooh.
Did you get all that, Cubby?
Did I get it? I ate both of my bars already.
32% cocoa.
Exactly.
Yeah. Leslie, I have these for you. There's three bars.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. By the way, I am going to order something for Lanny. I thought those shirts looked cool.
Well, I'll take care of you. I do have a little code that you can use.
Okay, I'll use the code. Thank you.
Yep. I hadn't got a chance to tell you that yet, but I wanted to tell you today on the
show. Okay, great.
So thank you for, go to cool.com, K-U-H-L. They are not a sponsor. Just telling you that when we find things we like, we talk about them. And Cubby's already a convert, and I'm a convert.
They have great men's gear, women's gear. It's everything. Just top notch, and I fell in love with them, and I've been on it nonstop. So, yeah, KUHL.com. Check them out.
Another great find, Barnes. Another great find.
You're welcome. They're out of Salt Lake City, so cool.
All right, guys, you ready for This Week in Pop Culture? You ready for a poop-a-ray and pop-a-ray and pooping, popping stuff today?
Dude, you got abused for that one. If you haven't seen that promo on our social media, go back and look at it. Cubby
classic.
Got just railed.
Yeah, every now and then I might say a few things the wrong way, but you know what? I mean well. This has really gone viral in the past couple of days. During a mass, there was a priest, and he was trying to say a certain word, but... it's a simple word, but it didn't come out the right way.
Before we begin, let's pray. Heavenly Father, our hearts Carl made Ratty to hear the truth.
Well, because he was trying to say hearts, and then he...
Right. Please, one more time. Here we go. One more
Heavenly
time.
Heavenly Father farts.
Before we begin, let's pray. Let's pray. Heavenly farts. Heavenly Father, our hearts are made ready to hear the truth.
Oh, my gosh. You know what?
I'm sorry. That's just so funny and so real.
I wonder if there are, like, heavenly farts. Like, that could be a good hashtag.
I don't know where our minds are this week, but I'll see your priest and I'll raise you a priest.
What?
I have some Catholic humor also.
Okay.
This is funny that you have that. My priest did not mine, like the one I'm bringing forward.
Right.
He was up in front of, you know, the congregation like your guy was, and he was going to play a special, what's it called? The songs? What is the song called in
Psalms?
Church?
Hymns?
A hymn. He was going to play some special hymn, and he had it teed up on, remember those little old iPods?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. The little teeny ones. It did not go as planned.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.
Okay, it's Black the Ripper, it's Last Samson, the Good Child on Productions, check the freestyle, look.
What happened?
Oops.
Black the Ripper. Well, maybe a bit of rap in the morning wakes you up. Anyway, still nice to see you all here in Bordenport this morning.
It's like he's doing his own This Week in Pop Culture segment. He played a clip.
He had a little fun with it.
So that's now great. We know what that, he was from Ireland. You can tell by his voice that we know what he does in his spare time. He's jamming to Black the Ripper. All right, Leslie, with the pressure's on, there's two priest flubs. What you got?
Well, I've got one from the Pope. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know about you guys, but I literally taped and then watched the Meghan Markle Prince Harry interview with Oprah.
Oh, boy.
And I'm going to say this, Barnes, I know you don't agree with me, but I agreed and believed most of what she had to say, only based on history.
Mm-hmm. I'm with Leslie, actually. You know, I will admit, though, my thoughts changed throughout the week. Every day I get swayed a certain way.
It's easy to get swayed when you look at social media. But the one thing I didn't really buy is at the very beginning when she said she didn't know what she was getting into. I mean, in this day and age, you kind of have to know your research and know what you are getting into. But I do believe the isolation, and she kind of went through a lot of the stuff that Diana went through. But one of the bombshells that she talked about was that when she was 5 months pregnant, she had suicidal thoughts.
And I realized that it was all happening just because I was breathing.
Mm.
And look, I was really ashamed to say it at the time and ashamed to have to admit it to Harry, especially because I know how much loss he suffered.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that if I didn't say it, that I would do it. And I just didn't want to be alive anymore. And that was a very clear and real and frightening constant thought.
Well, I think that she did attempt to get help from, quote unquote, the firm, and she was ignored, completely ignored, and they didn't give her any help. I think the other revelation that people are talking about is when she said, and Harry had told her this, that there was some concern about the child's skin color. And that, and Oprah, like, you saw this moment where Oprah was like, what?
Oprah knew everything that was coming. It's funny how they talk about, they didn't, you know, none of this is, you know, set up. None of this is, everything's on limits.
Yeah, things are spinning out of control in the media, and we'll get into that in a little bit in Celebrity Sleaze.
It's like the water cooler talk of the week. Everywhere I've gone, from getting a haircut
Everywhere.
To whatever, it's like, what do you think? And it has been so 50-50. People falling on your side, where you believe her, and then people on my side who are going, that's stupid shit.
On my morning radio show, I knew we would talk about it on Monday and even Tuesday and maybe even Wednesday. And then Thursday and Friday, I'm like, maybe we'll not talk about this. And then
no way.
Lo and behold, every day, and now over a week later, it's still a hot topic.
Yeah. And we made a mistake, not a mistake, but we questioned last week when I said something like, has this ever happened before? I don't know my royal history. I was quickly called out by my wife that said that in the early whatever hundreds, someone did defect.
Oh, yes.
I don't know yes. my royalty. I was,
but
like,
not in modern times.
I more asked the question: has this happened where a guy goes running from, you know, from the family? I don't know.
Yes, definitely... look up Wallace Simpson, and you'll see that. But there's definitely history in the family of that. And obviously, when Prince Harry said history repeating itself, he was talking about his mother and everything that she went through.
And that, in my eyes, is fine to talk about publicly. But it's some of the other things that I feel like she didn't need to go there publicly with Oprah, the world psychologist. I don't know.
Yeah, but that I think that just shows you the power of Oprah too. You know, people get comfortable, and it's almost like I felt like nervous at the beginning of the interview, and then I felt like I was kind of eavesdropping about 20, 30 minutes into the interview because they were so comfortable.
And I agree.
You know what I'm saying?
Oprah got a lot out of them, and it was almost like a therapy session, right, Cubby?
Totally. Caught on camera.
I don't know why she doesn't go back to TV.
And the aftermath, I mean, you guys know Piers Morgan has just been slamming Meghan Markle for years. I mean, he just can't stand her, doesn't believe any of it, and he walked off his TV show. He just, like, walked off of Good Morning Britain based on all of this controversy and what he's had to say about her.
I'm done with this.
No, no, no.
Sorry. No.
Sorry. So, do you know what? That's pathetic.
You can trash me, but not my
own. No.
See you later.
I'm being...
Sorry. Can't
this
do this.
This is absolutely diabolical behavior.
That was it. That was his last appearance.
Yeah. He got fired after that, right?
Did he quit or got fired?
I think he quit, and then, you know, Sharon Osbourne is now apologizing because she came to his defense, and then people were calling her out. I mean... seriously, the aftermath of this is crazy.
So celebs are coming out of the woodwork, guys, to run for office. I mean, I feel like this has been a trend for years. Rumors include Geraldo running for Senate in Ohio.
Boy.
You got Matthew, all right, McConaughey for governor in Texas. And this guy saying it in his own words.
I absolutely have an opinion. I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful. I believe in understanding between people. I believe in the possibility of harmony. So I will certainly do my part, whether it remain artistic or at some point ventures into the political arena.
I believe item one on his list will be to get a script speechwriter. I believe he struggled and made that all up.
But that voice was pretty identifiable.
Yeah. I believe it's Will Smith.
Correct.
Oh, man, these guys. And they get the power, and then they, you know, look at Schwarzenegger, who thought he would be the governor of California.
Yeah, I'm waiting for McConaughey, though. That's going to be classic.
That would be a trip.
Yeah, I could see him being a gov, Matthew McConaughey.
Yes, I can.
So weird.
Yeah. Real quick, though, it didn't work out for Kanye, guys.
You're right, and he spent, what, $13 million?
Yeah, $13 million on that.
Damn. Well, let's wrap it up with, I like Netflix taking a swipe with this new Kevin Smith doc at something that is near and dear in everybody's hearts.
Did you know that Blockbuster had a chance to buy Netflix, but they didn't?
Now that, to me, is crazy.
It is truly the last standing bastion of a bygone era.
If there's some cats in Oregon still scratching it out, you know, with Be Kind, Rewind, nothing wrong with that. That's beautiful.
What a difference. They're launching this documentary about the last Blockbuster. It's called The Last Blockbuster.
Wow.
Comes out on the 15th of this month.
That I love. I know. I want to see this so bad. And they were kind of head-to-head for a while, pretty much.
Well, they turned down buying it.
I know.
That's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Diving into celebrity sleaze, I don't know if you guys watched Coming to America.
I did.
I have to say that, you know, people that are trying to dissect whether this is a good movie or not, let's face it. I mean, this movie was for the fans. I think Eddie Murphy did this movie for the fans. There's some great cameos, obviously, all of the characters that Eddie Murphy does. But I was sitting there watching, and then all of a sudden there's Salt and Peppa and En Vogue and Gladys Knight. I thought it was a great ride. I enjoyed it.
I defended it like you, and I watched it on the plane. I thought it was a big turd.
Well,
but it's so funny.
I wanted it to be funny.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, so I heard you need to go into the mentality that it's not going to be the next great movie. It's like you said, for the fans, Leslie.
It's for the fans, and it's the cameos, and, you know, of course, Eddie Murphy, who's still funnier than ever. But by the way, Barnes reportedly earned more viewers during its debut weekend than any other streaming service movie of the past year.
Don't doubt it. I was there. I wanted it so bad.
Yeah.
The parts where Eddie Murphy plays all those parts in the barbershop, hysterical. That is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And the cameos were great. And the person that stole the show, what's that guy's name?
Tracy Morgan.
Tracy Morgan definitely stole the show.
Yeah.
But all of that was all kind of side pocket stuff to the story I just thought was weak.
Tracy Morgan, Arsenio, Morgan Freeman. But by the way, there's a rumor that Eddie Murphy's already talking about doing another Coming to America. He's already talking about it. Coming to America 3.
Get money, get paid.
Yeah. And come on. Well, I guess Demi Lovato has come fully to realize that she's a queer, though she will not divulge a label. She says, I know I am what I am. I'm just waiting until a specific time to come out to the world as what I am. I'm following my healer's timeline. And finally, is J-Rod over? Well, reports earlier in the week, there were reports that Jennifer Lopez and A-Rod were over, but now they're saying they're quote-unquote trying to work things out. I just don't think she trusts him.
By the time you hear this, it could be changing again.
Wasn't he dropping in someone's DMs? Isn't that the story? But they never really met.
They never really met. And then people are saying that, you know, they have, because of they've been together 4 years, you know, they have a lot of stuff they've been doing together. Can you imagine trying to unravel that? I mean, they have a lot of business stuff together.
They had a Zoom rendezvous. That's the only way you can do it these days.
Hey, the Pop Culture Show is presented by Big Five Rum. Welcome to the club. Big Five Coconut Rum is made in Florida with all natural flavors and made with sugarcane sourced from South Florida. And Big Rum is currently available in New York, Maryland, Georgia, and of course, in Florida at retailers like ABC, Publix, and more. Please ask your local liquor store if they can carry Big Five Rum, and you'll be very, very happy.
I keep asking, and Publix like, dude, you live in Georgia. We don't have liquor. I'm like, okay, but still, they told me to ask. It really is good.
You got to keep asking. It'll come.
Are you drinking it straight, Cubby, or are you doing it with Diet Coke?
I'm doing it both ways, but I took your advice, and I'm digging the Diet Coke aspect.
It's really sweet.
Cubby, I love it.
Is this the new 5 o'clock happy hour for you?
Well, lately, no. We still kick off with the 5 p.m. shot of choice. And then after that, happy hour is with Big Five Rum.
And then he spends the night. See, the other person that he sips at 5 is just the opening act.
Correct.
And then he gets his big 5.
That's when no one's in the crowd. Then, you know, when the place is full, you pull out the Big 5 Rum.
All right, if you're listening right now, you're not going to see his beautiful face. But if you're watching on Roku or Amazon or Apple TV, you're seeing Matt Nathanson. Hey, Matt.
Hi. Oh, my God. That's great. Beautiful face.
I had to say, so I wasn't going to say, look at this ugly mug.
Seriously, this COVID-ized, beat down, year-long.
He is a handsome devil, though.
Lockdown.
How are you?
You know, doing the thing where your life is like at 30% for a whole year, and then probably for another year, it'll still be at about 30%.
The thing and the thing.
It's a strange time for all of us. Yeah.
You have a birthday coming up, by the way. March 28th, I was checking your bio.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and I realized this too, that it's my second it's my second birthday in kind of like in COVID. So I sort of feel a milestone and a millstone and all the stones. Ron Wood, Mick Jagger. Yeah.
I am a huge fan, and I've been a fan of your music for so long. So when they asked us, Eric was like, you guys want to have Matt Nathanson on? I was like, hell yes.
Yes.
Awesome. We have a lot. I mean, he told me you worked at a pizza shop, love heavy metal. And I was like, dude, that you're mirroring my life.
I know. And you have a Pepperdine shirt.
Yes.
And I played Pepperdine once and I swore a lot and it went over like a lead balloon.
I did not go to Pepperdine. I just was there and bought the Pepperdine tennis t-shirt.
Oh, it's a great school. It's a beautiful place, but we did like a college show and I have a mouth like a sailor. And if I'd known at the beginning that I should have done my sort of like a little bit less than sailor set, I would have been good, but I went full sailor and there were some awestruck looks.
Well, you're welcome to cuss here, by the way.
No, I've got my Mormon filter on just in case. That's what I call it. When I was a kid, I used to go to Provo to play shows a lot because my best friends growing up were Mormon. And so when I was an independent sort of kid driving around in a car, I still am independent. But when I used to go where people wanted me to go, and I went to Utah and built like a huge following of people at BYU. And being non-Mormon and being like pretty much the antithesis of what a Mormon represented at the time. It was pretty fun. It was, and so I have this, I have my Mormon filter is what I call it, where I love PG that. It out a little bit.
Matt, we're going to go down a deep, dark rabbit hole with you because there's so many things that have intersected with all of our lives. First of all, we have to talk about Atlanta because Barnes and I, you know, did a radio show there for many, many years at 99X, but you are a big fan of a lot of Atlanta, Athens artists from Indigo Girls to REM.
Yeah.
And tell us about your love of the Indigo Girls, because I know you've done a lot with them.
Oh, yeah. So growing up, I was super into metal, right? As we talked about. But there was a moment in kind of the late 80s where this new folk movement occurred. And in the new folk movement, Indigo Girls and Driving and Crying and, you know, and almost every bit REM, every band, and then Athens, Georgia, Inside Out was that documentary that came out about Athens that had all those great bands like Pylon, Love Tractor. So anyway, but it was the first time in my life when I saw Indigo Girls where I was like, that's who I want to be. I want to be Amy Ray. Like, I want to be her. I want to play a black guitar. I want to wear jeans with like holes in the knees and cowboy boots and like play folk music that just sounds punky and badass. And it was totally one of those things where I went from wanting to be Joe Elliott and Def Leppard or Bret Michaels from to being just like, I'm going to be Amy Ray. And from then on, I saw them constantly when they would come through Boston on tour. And then I went to school in Los Angeles and then I ended up and seeing them there. And then I ended up doing a artist retreat with them in New Orleans and became friends with them and have done many shows with them since and have sung with them on stage and have looked to them for inspiration in their, you know, in their the stuff they do. They do so many grassroots advocating for like incredible causes and incredible people, and they're just truly are some of the most amazing humans. When you usually when you meet your heroes, and I've met a lot of my heroes, I'd just as soon like I always say I'd rather hang out with Born to Run than Bruce Springsteen, but the Indigo Girls are like a perfect example of just like they are even more exceptional than their music. Like, and their music is exceptional, but like, they're incredible.
That's such a whiplash turn to go from this metal Beavis and Butthead to all of a sudden you're like closer to fine. Ah, I mean,
yeah, it really is a 180. It really is.
What was it that like captured you with Indigo Girls to take you down that path?
It's funny. I listened to both. Like, for example, last night I listened to Leonard Cohen and Skid Row. Do you know what I mean? So like, I'm still in there. But to me, it was like, all of a sudden there was this, the lyrics, I'd never really noticed. I always thought lyrics like gasoline, you want to pump me. Like, I thought that was the apex of like lyrical, you know what I mean? Like, and then all of a sudden the Indigo Girls and Suzanne Vega and Tracy Chapman and Natalie Merchant, all of a sudden there was this, with Indigo Girls being literally the number one for me. There was just the, all of a sudden lyrics mattered and it was like, whoa. I'm being moved on more than just a sort of, I had U2 to sort of be the bridge between for me, between metal and folk. But anyway, so it was really this idea that they could just deliver something bare bones with just harmony and an acoustic guitar. And it was like flooring me. And that was incredible.
Do you remember an artist named Michelle Schacht around that same time?
Of course. I mean, Anchored Down in Anchorage.
Anchorage
is a great song. And
yeah,
she's unfortunately, you know, did you hear any of the stuff that she had a little bit of a, she has a little bit of a, I think she's slightly, I don't know how to put it kindly. I think she's a little bit troubled.
She's writing and I think she's, I don't know if she's in Nashville, but I talked to her like 6 months ago. I think she's writing.
Oh, really? She had a little bit of a meltdown on stage here in San Francisco where she said a couple things that were a little bit of a like, uh-oh. Like, but she's awesome. I love her. Like, and Anchorage is probably one of my favorite, like in terms of one of the greatest. What a song.
Yeah.
I mean, what an artist. She was revolutionary before there. She pushed against record labels. She pushed against like all the boundaries of being like a female artist in that way. She really kicked out she refused is what she did. She refused to do it. And so, so anyway, other than other than my friend being at the show in San Francisco, I think she's rad and she's just unbelievable.
Who's the biggest artist that you have yet to meet that you idolize? You talk about how these artists captivate you so much. Have you met Joe Elliott? Have you met Bono?
So I'm friends with Joe Elliott, which is crazy.
That is crazy.
Like, this is one of the only you know, Leslie, it's like you get to become friendly with the people who are your heroes. when they're really cool, like Amy and Emily, like Joe, like the guys in Def Leppard. And but to me, I've decided that I don't know if I want to meet my heroes anymore, but Bono lives in this sort of untouchable realm for me of like...
Wait.
I'm so glad that you said this. Go ahead, Barnes, because we have to talk about this.
We for the last 2 weeks, we went down this rabbit hole of telling our stories, and we have this segment called Once Upon a Time, where we take a photo from our... Just like you said, you become friends with all these people. We take a photo and we put it on the screen and we tell the story behind the photo. So what happened before, what's happening during, all this stuff.
I love it.
And the last two we did were Bono. Me and Bono, Fram and Bono.
Wait, tell, please. Oh my goodness.
Go back and listen to the episode.
I will. I'll find it.
Oh, great, Barnes.
But I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do it.
If we can get a listener, any way we can. But that's weird. You have not met Bono. And we said in our stories, he is pretty much untouchable, and it's unheard of to have audience with him face to face for any length of time.
Yeah, he's I mean, I'm a U2 I would say fanatic. Like, I would say that my love of that band is, I like to say that anybody who thinks they like U2, it's sort of like, I don't think you like you. I feel like I could do a dissertation and like, you know, on their records and on the, but so anyway, but Bono, I just feel like what I love about Bono and what I love about U2 is, unlike Dylan or Joni Mitchell or the Beatles or Stevie Wonder or Prince, who are sort of these geniuses, like literally just their brains work in a way that's so different. U2 are like very mortal. Like all four of those people are very human. And what they do exceptionally well, and what they have done exceptionally well in their career, is they've been conduits for the beautiful, like, amazing magic that exists, and they've been able to, like, through their limited abilities, which is incredibly appealing to someone like me, who's not in any way proficient genius. It doesn't mean that they're not great, but they are really mortal in all of their abilities. But as a unit, they're able to channel this sort of otherworldly magic, and they've done it so consistently throughout their life that to me, that's one of the, that's like, that it's so much more approachable and so much more, it's just as magical as Prince, but it just feels like, wow, you did it. Like four Irish, like kids from, two English, two Irish. But the idea, we saw them on the Joshua Tree redo, and I just started crying from the drop. And I turned to my wife and I was like, how crazy is it that these, like when they were kids, they were like, we want to play music and we want to bring it to the world. And they did it. And they did it on the sheer will and power of like this punk ideal of like, we can do that. We got this. And then they just believe in each other and they believe in the magic of community and the magic of music. And like, I just think there's nothing better than that.
Well, just so you know, being around him is like being around a president. You have this, it's that aura, like it touches you, like this powerful rock star superpower thing. You just feel it coming off of them. And if you haven't seen it yet, you need to watch Behind Her Eyes on Netflix. That's Bono's daughter, the lead. And for me, watching that as such a fan, it was just wild to watch. She's so good in it.
But Six Degrees of Bono. But I have to say this. You should do your one-man play or one-man show about that. Was so eloquent what you just
Leslie,
said. But I have to tell you this, though. I saw you on an award show years ago, and I don't remember what award show it was. But you were performing with Jennifer Nettles. You were doing Run, and you were channeling Bono. You sounded like him. You looked like him. I know that people have told you that before.
Well, I'd like to think it's that we both have these noses. Mine is from the Jewish. I come from Irish Catholic stock, but this is definitely my dad's Jewish heritage here in the nose. But I feel like I look a little bit, but I've learned to sing because of Bono. He's the only reason, his phrasing, his, and like you were saying about, it's just, it's the best thing in the world to be able to love an artist like that and to have them become part of who you are. So that's the biggest compliment you could have ever said. And
it's true.
I always try. I always think, what would you two do in this situation? But
Matt, it's funny. We've been talking about Bono, and we here at the Pop Culture Show have a surprise for you.
All right, bring him on.
Imagine.
Ladies
and
gentlemen.
Here comes the 5'7" Irish Christ.
That'd be so cool if we had Bono pop up on the screen right now, but not happening. Oh, well.
And by the way, I've met presidents and the Dalai Lama, and so I feel ready for Bono if I were to sort of bump into him on the street. But at the same time, I think I'd just sort of pass by. I'd just be like, yeah, it's all good.
I know you're an REM fan. Did you ever get to do anything with them?
So I've met Peter Buck a couple times. Mm-hmm. I mean, REM were another band of mortals, although Michael Stipe is a bit of he is the X factor in that band in terms of he feels a little not of this earth. But right. What I loved about REM, and
that's
REM
a nice
is one
way
again,
of saying it.
One of my favorite bands.
Me too.
Like, I mean, you can't truly, like, Leslie, for an arc perspective of a band, right? You from Murmur all the way through, like, to Bill's leaving, you could argue that for me, it was like Automatic for the People and mm-hmm. then Monster, but then New Adventures in Hi-Fi. The whole Bill arc was so great. And then they got it back with Bill, the other drummer, Bill Rifflin, and then when Joey was in the band. But like as an arc, you can't get any better in my mind than like the first eight REM records or the first eight U2 records. It's like they just kept building strength on strength on strength. And it's like, that's incredible. You know?
I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah. And like what you're saying, too, the other thing about REM that's so fascinating is, again, friends, like the individuals by themselves aren't nearly as powerful as the unit. And there's this great story about, I don't want to go into too much of it, but that was so great about REM is that they decided we want to, like Michael Stipe said, hey, guys, I think I need some time away from this. And Pete Buck said, how about forever? And he said, and he said, sounds good to me. And Mike Mills said, sounds good to me. And that was it. Like they always did things only on their own terms. And it's like, that's a rarity. And so Jennifer, I forget, but singing with Jennifer, I mean, is like one of the high, I mean, we've done a sort of a secret thing that I can't talk about because it hasn't come out yet, but we've worked together a bunch, you know, because she's just so magical. And when she sings, it makes you a better singer. She's that kind of singer where like she's powerful and she's conducting the whole experience, but she's bringing you along and sort of like swooping you up in her greatness. So it's like, she's the best. And Christian too is awesome. And even Kristen Hall, who I saw open for the Indigo Girls way back, you know, I loved Kristen Hall. I talked to her after an Indigo Girls show once way back and I went, it's fun. I'm a nerd.
It's amazing because, you know, Jennifer does Broadway. She's in movies. She's done it all, and she's got, you're right, one of the best voices ever.
She's inexhaustible, too. Like, she really, when she gets so enthusiastic, and she's such a good performer, mm-hmm. and her voice is like, it's untouchable. Singing with her, and like, look, we sing to each other, you know, like in the studio, and it's like, it's the most intimate thing I've ever done with another person that was not particularly, you know, that wasn't really intimate in the real way of being intimate. You know, it's awesome.
It's like a musical sex scene, kind of.
It is. It's like, I mean, totally like fake making out with somebody.
Yeah, totally.
But for real, better.
Who's a band that everybody hates that you're like, man, I love them? And for me, it'd be like Nickelback. Like everyone disses them, and I crank it up and love. I can listen to them and like them. Is there any band like that that you're like,
I'm sure
everyone like takes a shit on them, but you're like, no, I love them.
Okay, wait, Cubby and Leslie, you got to tell me yours. So, Cubby, what's yours?
Oh my God, I wasn't prepared for this. Leslie, I'm going to defer to you. Let me think.
Oh, you guys.
You know, I think here's a great thing though about Matt Nathanson. It's like you love all kinds of music,
and you can
go down like a rabbit hole of all of the covers that you've done. And one of my favorite covers that you did, a song that we played at 99X for years, was "Laid" by James. Oof. But some of the covers that you've done, I don't know if you're doing it because you're goofing off or you really like the band. Because I saw you cover like "Asia." Heat of the moment.
John Wetton. Is there a better voice than John Wetton? I mean, like, yeah, I'm in that Asia, way in. Yeah.
I'm like, I kind of like some prog rock. I like Yes and, you know, some of those bands. So.
Owner of a Lonely Heart, you should do a cover of that.
Dude, or, you know, that period of Yes, I really like Love Will Find a Way.
Love Will Find a Way was a great song.
And,
yeah, 87.
Anytime you sing in French, I'm way in.
Right.
How about Accept, Balls to the Wall? You should
do that. Accept, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I don't have any guilty pleasures. I only have, like, truly, I listen to, I mean, you name it. If it moves me, there's a band called Steelheart that people make fun of. Like, Never Let You Go, or there's a period in Survivor, like, where Jim Peterik wrote these songs, like, I Can't Hold Back.
The Search
like,
is Over.
The Search is Over, Phil Collins. There's nothing to me that, I don't see it as bad. I just think people shit talk a lot of things because they see music as sort of elite. It's like fashion. I don't see it as fashion. I see it as, like, And it's sort of a turnoff when a band might be sort of too cool and sort of play it like that. So that's why I usually just ignore the band and love the music. Yeah. But I have no guilty. I mean, like, people shit on everything. I love the Dave Matthews Band. They've gotten sort of maligned over the last, in a weird way, there's a strange thing that happens over time where, like, all of a sudden the Goo Goo Dolls are like the butt of jokes. And it's like,
right.
if
it
you
weird?
Put on Black Balloon or so Iris weird. Or Name, you know, you just, I don't get it. The artist will remain nameless. A friend of mine, who I'm not really friendly anymore, wrote on Twitter, sometimes you go for Bruce Springsteen and you end up with John Mellencamp. And I thought to myself, dude, if you wrote a lyric where the chorus of your biggest song was, oh yeah, life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. It's like, if you can write a chorus that good with a lyric that heavy, like, you don't shit talk John Mellencamp. That right. guy is the, it, like, you can shit talk him as a person. Like, get all up in the fact that he's a little bastard and all the nicknames yeah. that he has and how difficult he is. Like, it's all good. But, like, from a musical standpoint, John Mellencamp has, I think John Mellencamp is an underrated, like, in the way that Tom Petty wasn't underrated because he was exceptional, Mellencamp was exceptional.
What about people that shit on bands that went pop, like, going back to R.A.M. for a second? I remember when I first started playing R.E.M. on pop radio, like, it's the end of the world.
But
and,
you know that the pop radio came over to R.E.M. It's like R.E.M. Yeah. built that. You know that. It's like
true. That, but R.E.M. fans would call radio and go, oh, man, you know, I can't believe you're playing them, man. That was our band. You know, like, but don't you want your band to be successful?
Well, that, but don't you want, like, it's not about your band. Like, we have enough narcissism in this culture that, like, and I think U2 is my band. I talk about it like, I'll take anybody on who wants to talk about U2. But, like, there was never a point where I was like, oh, that didn't, you know, I just don't see it. I think ambition, to me, where ambition meets art, like where commerce and art come together, that's where really fun stuff happens. And so I really love Tom Waits records, or I really love, you know, records that live in this spot. And I really love, you know, Voices of the Beehive, or records that live in like this sort of disgustingly pop syrupy thing. It's amazing. But to me, the real magic happens when you get this collision of like art and commerce. And so to me, that was always great. To me, when R.E.M. did The One I Love, or It's the End of the World As We Know It, or For God's Sake, Losing My Religion changed my life. Like, I couldn't believe that was a song that a band put out with a lyric like that. And it's the same with, to me, my favorite U2 song, and this gets me no, With or Without You is one of the finest examples of everything coming together in a way. It makes me cry every time I hear it. It's I'm weighing in like Trickster and Dangerous Toys.
Trickster.
And fucking Nelson, you know, it, I'm way in.
Is there a band where you go, maybe a genre where you go, I just don't get it.
That's a good question.
Well, this is a tough question, Leslie, because this is so. There is a certain element to most modern country music that I don't think I understand yet. What I see it as. Like, I see it as like, I don't think I understand it yet. Like, even when I go deep on like Townes Van Zandt or Willie Nelson, or, you know, that sort of the masters, or Johnny Cash or Kris Kristofferson, it's still like, for some reason there's a schism that happens with me where I want to get it. And but I go back to it every couple of years, and I'm always, and there's ones that move me within it, like The House That Built Me or whatever. There's songs that just like knock me flat. But like, as a genre, for some reason, like jazz almost, it just misses me. And I'm not sure why, because it's like the writers are top tier. The performances are top tier. Everything about it is transcendent from like but when I dig into it, I have yet to be able to like have it resonate with me. And jazz is the same way, or blues actually is the same way. I'll go listen to like a John Lee Hooker record and I'll be like, nope, I don't get it. Like, I get the genius, but I don't get the thing. And so country and blues kind of exist in this place where for some reason they have yet to get me. And so I'm psyched when they finally do, I'm gonna have like this wealth of shit to like to fall back on.
No, I see you liking more of like a Kacey Musgraves or a Brandi Carlile more. Or somebody more in the Americana space.
What about you, Leslie? Yeah. Who's your band that just
Leslie,
don't get?
You totally did a good job.
Band like, that I don't get?
No, yeah, like your question.
I don't like K-pop. Can't, I'm sorry, BTS. Totally.
That's such a safe answer, Leslie.
What?
Okay. Pick a country artist.
What about you, Cubby?
That I don't get?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you mine. It's going to piss everybody off.
Wait, current? Is it current?
Just, what's a band that everyone gets and you're like, I just don't get it?
You know what? Coldplay, I'll tell you what. Coldplay in the beginning I didn't get. Then I turned.
I didn't either, but I came around.
I came around. Yes. Yeah.
Early Coldplay, though, is brilliant. It's the scientist things like that. Yeah.
I heard Jeanette Napolitano from Concrete Blonde do the scientist. If you can look it up on YouTube, it's amazing if you haven't heard it. And that was really the thing. I like the Eno Viva La Vida record, but then the older stuff is magical. Like, yeah. I can't believe I missed
it's so
that.
So good.
I can't believe it.
I remember seeing that Yellow on Night Tracks. I remember seeing that going, oh my gosh, what a song.
I'll tell you one right now, because it's a total dude band. Never got Rush.
Oh, Leslie,
which is funny because your prog rockness Rush should be right in there.
Never got them.
Wow.
Oh my God, you guys, this is the best hang I've ever had. I love it.
be pissed at me. Mine is Bruce Springsteen.
So you've never like, and I understand that, but you've never gotten Springsteen, like not even a little.
Not once. Not even born in the USA. Like in his most accessible. I just don't get it.
But you can't deny his songs are like he has hits, right?
I don't deny that. I'm saying I don't
it
get
doesn't
it.
Doesn't move you. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Barnes and I worked with a guy named Jimmy Barron, and Jimmy and I were huge Springsteen fans, and we've been to see him all over the country. Like we've seen him like over 35, 40 times. Then we went to all the album shows in New York, and it just, you know, it's a thing. It's all about, you know, I love the boss.
And to me, Springsteen in his, like, I mean, Brilliant Disguise, Tunnel of Love, Born to Run, Badly. I mean, he's got at least 20 songs that I can't believe somebody wrote. So that's how I feel like, oh my God, Thunder Road. I let me make you a playlist and send it. Like,
Jungle Land.
Oh, Jungle Land is just bananas. I mean, bananas.
I want to test your heavy metal knowledge, your hairband knowledge.
But Brilliant Disguise. Think about this, the lyrics in Brilliant Disguise. But tell me who I see when I look in your eyes. Is that you, baby, or just some brilliant disguise? Like that whole lyric, like in the, and it says, I got to pull up the lyrics. Keep going. Ask me the metal thing. I'll pull up the Brilliant Disguise lyric so I can.
Hairband, late 80s, early 90s. Identify this song. I'll play a little bit of it. Title and artist, please.
Kicks.
Yes, whoa. Kicks. Don't close your eyes.
Yeah.
Damn, good job.
Cubby, do another one. This is awesome.
Let me find another one while you're, because I have to pull them up on YouTube.
Heaven.
Heaven by Warrant.
Dude, you got a picture of your house.
Unbelievable.
And you're standing by the door. Woo! It's black and white and faded.
I used to love that song.
And this is not the album version, actually. That's a different version, it sounds like, but maybe it is. Is it from Dirty Rotten Filthy Stinkin' Rich, or is it the re-recorded version?
I don't know. It's a single version, I think. They did they changed with the processing and stuff back then with the singles for radio.
He got sued for that song because it's a total ripoff of something. I forget
what
really?
It was.
Janie Lane was a great writer, but he had to give part of the publishing up on that song.
Oh, wow.
But I hold you in my arms as the band plays. What are those words whispered, baby, just as you turn away? I saw you last night out on the edge of town. I want to read your mind to know just what I've got in this new thing I found. So tell me what I see when I look in your eyes. Is that you, baby, or just a brilliant disguise? I heard somebody call your name from underneath our willow. I saw something tucked in shame underneath your pillow. Well, I've tried so hard, baby, but I just can't see what a woman like you is doing with me. So tell me who I see when I look in your eyes. Is it me, baby, or is it you, baby, or just some brilliant disguise? And then it says, now you play the loving woman and I'll play the faithful man, but just don't look too close into the palm of my hand. We stood at the altar. The gypsy swore our future was right. Or bright is what the lyric is. The gypsy swore our future was bright. But come the wee hours, maybe, baby, the gypsy lied. So when you look at me, you better look hard and look twice. Is that me, baby, or just some brilliant disguise? And Springsteen was such a philanderer in that respect and treated people that he loved with such shit, like shit, that it's like that's the to Julianne Phillips or whatever her, you know, his first wife. It's he flips it around. Like and when you look at me, you better look hard and look twice.
That was the video in one take, I believe, right?
Yeah, where they zoomed in on him sitting.
Yeah.
He had overalls on. And then, oh my God. I'm getting excited. Springsteen gets me excited. And I have a bit of a checkered past with him in terms of, like, I have moments of not really, you know, but when he, and I had an experience with him that I was like, I don't ever need to meet my heroes again. But that being
let's go back to that.
No, I can't. I can't. It's too much. But that being said, because everybody loves him and everybody thinks he's great. I just had a particularly bad hang with him. But he's so good that it's great. Okay, sorry.
Did you ever have one of those Saturday Night Live moments when you did meet, one of your heroes and then you just fell apart? Because I know I have.
So I got to hear yours. I have two particularly acute ones that are really painful. The first was when I met Pete Buck at a show at a Toad the Wet Sprocket 10,000 Maniacs T-Bone Burnett show at the Wiltern. The Automatic for the People was coming out the next week, and I was sitting one row behind him, and I leaned in. And it's the first time. I'd met him a couple times since, but this time, and I'd never told him this, but I leaned in and I said, "Oh my God, you're Pete Buck." And I was just sort of going. And he goes like this. He goes, "Hey, nice to meet you, Matt. I'm Peter. This is my friend Martin." He was super rad and super hospitable. And I said, "Well, I'm really excited for your record." And he goes, "Thanks." And I said, and then I just came out. I said, "I'm really glad you're not drinking." "You've lost a lot of weight. You look really good." And he goes, thanks. And then he goes like this. He goes, "Thanks, I've cut down on drinking." And then I said, "Good, because I know you were drinking a lot there for a while." And I was just like, what is wrong with me? And then I saw him in the lobby later, and I went up to him and I said, "Peter Buck, I am a fucking idiot, and I'm really sorry." And he goes, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's all good." And then we talked about the solo in Flowers of Guatemala or whatever, and he was like, "Cool." But then and then the second time was when I went up to Tom York at the Fillmore in San Francisco. They used to used to play up in the lounge in between acts. And so David Gray and Radiohead came on the Benz tour. And David Gray, so I played before David Gray, then David Gray played, then I played, then Radiohead played. So before the show even starts, there's dinner. And I'm eating dinner. It's part of the perk of being there. And Tom York is sitting across. And the Benz is one of my favorite records. I mean, it's crushing how good it was at the time, how still good it is. So I go up to him when he gets up to get more chicken. And I said, "Tom, I'm Matt. Nathan said I'm playing here tonight." He's like, "Oh, he's the nicest." And I go, "I just want to tell you, da, da, da." And I said, "And the Benz is one of the best records I've ever heard. I can't believe." And I said, "It's too bad it's not selling." But what I meant was, "I'm sorry. I don't know why you're not the biggest band in the world." That's what I meant. But it came out as "I don't know." And he goes, "Oh no, it's starting to sell now." And I said, "No, I mean really selling."
No, you're like the guy who can't stop at the one insult. No, you have to hold on to the second one.
It's unbelievable.
That is brutal.
Wow. It was brutal. Dude,
it was the worst. I was like, "Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth." And I couldn't. I just kept saying it. Wow. Leslie, you sound like you've had an experience similar.
You need to go back and check out some of our shows. We can make a whole documentary on her mishaps.
So good. It's
like
so
following
good.
The wrong car home one time.
No,
that was
I
one
just
my
have
favorites.
To say that I have always been in love with Jackson Browne.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's one of my favorite songwriters of all time. And the first time I met him, I was carrying these pictures of the first concert I ever went to. And I go up to meet him. It was this meet and greet. And I'm like, "Remember the time?" And I'm showing these pictures he would remember. And it was people around me were like, "We're not with her. We're not with her."
I can't see you doing that.
It's so good.
You know.
"Remember that time that you played this thing and this was the thing?"
Right.
And he's just like,
"Idiot."
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Idiot.
Dude, I'll tell you what, it gives you, as people who are in the world that people know, it really helps when somebody bumps into you at the coffee shop and they say, "I really love what you do." And they can say any, I mean, they could literally give me a severed hand and I'd be like, "Oh, this is sweet. Whose hand is this?" You know, because I know that I said to the singer in the Gin Blossoms how much I loved the songs he didn't write. You know what I mean? That was my favorite. And Doug Hopkins had killed himself a week before. And I said
to
him,
"You did that a week,"
and I had no idea because the internet didn't exist. And so I went up to him and I said, "Man, I got to tell you, because there's a lyric in a Gin Blossoms record. It's one of my favorite lyrics of all time. It says, she had nothing left to say, so she said she loved me. And I stood there grateful for the lie." Which is one of the heart. And then it says,
what single is this?
It's the Lost Horizons, the first song on New Miserable Experience. And then he has a line that says, because it's Doug Hopkins who is an alcoholic, and he said, "But when the sin smiles, how can it be wrong?" Ugh. And it was like another heartbreaking. So I went up to Robin and I said, "I'm a huge fan. I'm here to see you at the Catalyst." He's like, "Thanks so much." And he was so cool. And I know him now, but I never would say this. And I said, "I got to tell you, the lyrics in Hey Jealousy, but especially Lost Horizons, those songs are, and he just sort of, he went, and then turned and walked out of the pizza place. And I was like, oh no. And then later I looked in the liner notes. I was like, oh fuck, it's the only song he didn't write.
And he killed himself a week
and he had, and Doug Hopkins had shot himself the week before. So it was probably a raw nerve.
He was a
too bad you guys
writer.
Aren't selling.
Incredible.
Oh, that's brutal.
Incredible. Like what an asshole. Like, what are you saying? Stop talking.
That's great.
Wow. We should try all these stories about how these mishaps, maybe we can help you meet Bono. Cubby, who do you need to meet? Maybe Matt can help you meet whoever.
Yeah, who do you want to meet?
Who
you
do
tell
you
me.
Need?
God, you know what? I feel fortunate. I've met so many people. No, I don't. Do I sound like a dick?
Oh, I do mornings in New York.
No, no,
you're like, hold on, Joni Mitchell, please give me a second.
Exactly.
And then you're like,
yeah, you know, I mean,
there's
I can't,
no one.
I nothing.
Wow.
Really?
You're kidding me.
Are you
what
kidding
the
me?
Fuck? Are you joking?
I mean, throw some names out. I don't care about meeting people, celebrities.
You really don't.
I just do the interviews.
It's not about meeting celebrities. It's about, you know, meeting your heroes.
Yeah.
Well, that's great, because last week you told me Matt Nathanson. Here we are.
And yeah, that's true.
All right. Here we go. This is why. You're at the top of the mountain.
I've always thought it'd be cool to meet a president, no matter what your political affiliation, to have a picture with a president. I mean, that would be cool. Well, I've never done that.
Oh, no. Barnes.
I met...
really, Cubby?
Well, you know, when I tee with Obama.
I just want Reese Witherspoon. I can't even get that.
Oh. I don't know who...
Leslie?
Leslie, you got to have somebody good.
See, we're all struggling here.
Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, oh, that's what I'm saying. Cameron, I had dinner with Cameron Crowe, right? Like very long, like 3-hour amazing dinner with him.
That was very name droppy the way you said
that.
Well,
no, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the kind of thing where, like, he was my hero. He's made some of my favorite movies.
He's so cool, yeah.
He's the coolest. Like, he's made 3 of my favorite movies of all time. And I got to have this, like, once in a lifetime hang with him, and like we're kind of friendly. I mean, that we email or whatever, but which is nothing. But like, he and Joni Mitchell are fucking tight. Like right now, ooh, like buddies. Like that's crazy. Joni Mitchell is. Did you see that sort of terrible documentary that's still amazing that came out kind of in the early late 90s?
Yeah,
Hearts and Souls or whatever. She is. I was crying watching her just describe her. She is just an angel from another place. Like, she really is, like, touched.
I don't know if you know, if you ever heard about this, but Brandi Carlile did her entire Blue album last year before COVID happened. I mean, and she did it in front of Joni Mitchell, which is a little intimidating.
Can you imagine? Oh, I've been doing these little EPs of, like, covers. So I did the Def Leppard covers EP, and that's how I got to know those guys. I did a Chicago, the city of Chicago. So I did, like, all bands from Chicago. And the idea is that I just want to start nerding out like that and doing, like, in celebration of bands that I love. And so it's fun.
What happened to the project that you were working on with Butch Walker? Because he's a friend of ours. He was on the show.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. So Butch and I made a record that pretty much we started about a year ago, finished in April in the middle of COVID, like remotely, where I would just record parts and then we would build them. And then since there's no reason to put out a record until we can tour, it's just been, I've been writing songs to kind of knock other songs off, and I'll go back in with him a couple times just to spruce it up. But he's another Atlanta,
he's amazing.
He's a genius. Like, he's unstoppably good. Everything he comes up with, you're just like, okay, well that's right. Like, that's how it is. Everything he plays, whether it's drums or piano or guitar or singing harmonies, there's never a moment where I'm like, well, that isn't right. You know what I mean? It's like, it's always like, well, that's exactly right. And we've written songs together and stuff and known each other a bunch of years, but it was fun to do a whole record, even though COVID came in and kind of.
I want to ask you a question that a lot of people ask me over the years, and I never really have a great answer for it. It's about musicians and how musicians get paid. When you put a record out, and I mean, do you just get like monthly checks that come in, or how does it work? Like, how does
it all
depends.
Work? So when I was on a label, I put out one record on a major, and that really the only money came from the advance. Then I put out a bunch of records on an independent label, and that was a different situation. But now the way it works is I make the record, I put the money into the record. We usually do a pre-sale, and then that money comes in that way. And then you end up making money once you recoup if you're doing a licensing deal, it comes in kind of every quarter.
Interesting. So like, what about, I hear your songs on TV shows all the time. Like, do you get royalties from the show and from the song?
Yeah, you get it from the performing rights organizations.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they, and so that's how it works. So you kind of get, and now Sound Exchange for online stuff. And, but yeah, there's just sort of organizations set up that capture that money and then funnel it out to you.
Because it is weird to think about, because people, you don't get a paycheck every 2 weeks. It's like from Nathanson Inc.
And yeah, it's a strange, I'm into it, but it's a strange thing.
So artists over this, but a lot of it would be touring and merch, right? So, I mean, it's been a weird year.
Oh, you're talking the pandemic. Oh, yeah. No, it's been strange. I think I've been working at about 15% capacity because you just make all your money touring. That's just how it works. Like, not even merch, but literally touring. I think we did my management company manages a bunch of bands and they're all varying degrees of powerful. And I think all of them make the majority of their money through their tours. Like, it's just how it works.
How strange has it been for you, though, not being able to tour and kind of being home over the last year?
Oh, that's an entire brutal podcast, right? By itself.
Yeah, getting old, right? Getting old. Sure.
Well, no, but it's like because there's the best way I can put it is the human collision and the coming in and out of the life of somebody who plays music all the time. There's like a real rhythm that happens that gets disrupted, obviously, not being able to do it. And then there's also a rhythm at home that gets disrupted because you're with your partner and you've been with them for a long time, but now you're with them all the time and you haven't been with them all the time in a long time. And they're sort of like, so what happened for me was it brought up for both of us, it brought up a lot of stuff that we hadn't been dealing with and then we had to deal with it. So it's been a crazy ass year, like working through stuff personally, having the sort of traumatic experience of spending, it's like I think a lot about a runner or like the drummer in Def Leppard who like spends his whole life doing this thing and then loses his arm. And it's like all of a sudden the thing you built your whole life up to do, now you can't do it. And then he figured out because he's a badass, Rick Allen figured it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, but it's kind of that thing where like you're a runner and all of a sudden you blow out your leg and you can't run anymore. And your whole identity is based around this thing and but really it's the pushing of the air when you sing, it's the collision against the people when you're performing. That stuff is like really important to me and fulfilling. And so not being able to do that has been, whew, and knowing it was going to be 2 years, you know, six, 8 months ago, you know, as you know, too, it was like knowing this was not just going to clear itself up.
Well, I would think some good music might come from that. It sounds like you've had the things that, you know, will inspire you to write.
Yeah, a lot of songs. I've been writing a lot. Leslie, and also, do you know Lori McKenna and I have been writing a lot?
The Mumbers
Dance. She's amazing.
Best. And I wrote with Hillary Lindsay as well. So like I did a bunch of Nashville writes for this record, and the writing caliber of the people in Nashville
is crazy.
Untouchable. It's untouchable.
Crazy.
Oh, and I wrote with, on the last couple records ago, I wrote with Alan Shamblin and Tom Douglas.
Tom Douglas.
I've never seen anything like it. This was the maybe seven years ago, and I was intimidated. They just wrote all over me. They were so good that I was like cowering in the back, and I was just like, you guys are too good. Like, they'd pull out these lines and these melodies, and I was tearing up, and it's like, there's just Nashville is literally where I've never seen that much power in one place in my life.
You have a lot of fans here, and you know that.
Well, it's like a great, I would live there if San Francisco cracked off the side of the earth and slipped into the water. I would do it in a second. It could, totally could.
We're so glad you could come on with us. Thank you very much.
God. I love you guys.
So you have to come back on and just talk music with us.
I want to
stop recording and just talk more. There's so much more to say.
There's a lot of music talk we have to do. Yeah.
Oh, well, my gosh.
Let's
guys,
come back in a couple of months and just have a shop talk, a music shop talk.
I'm so deeply in. I love it.
Awesome. Matt Nathanson, anything you want to promote in this last few seconds that we can call attention to, like a new record or a new this or a new that?
I don't know.
No? All right, well, might as
just
well
just got records and live records and holiday records and put out EPs and stuff. I don't know. Just find me.
Just
if
find
you
him. Find him. Yeah. MattNathanson.com is a good place
I'm
to
around.
Start.
Yeah.
All right, man. We'll see you later.
Thank awesome. You so much.
Thanks, guys.
The Pop Culture Show is presented by Big 5 Rum. Welcome to the club. We'll see you next week.